So I also get the honor to introduce our speaker tonight. Last year, he was right up there on the list. My wife and I listened like four or five times. He had got a lot of votes, but unfortunately, he had another commitment, Ireland or somewhere like that. But you're in for a treat. Dalton's passionate about recovery. I haven't got to spend much time with him because I've been running back and forth trying to figure out which direction I'm going, but he's got a solid message of recovery. He's super passionate. I'm so grateful that they're here. Dalton.
My name's Dalton, I'm an addict. And I am so grateful to be here. First and foremost, I just want to take a second to invite my higher power in and ask him to go first. Thank you. I also want to take another minute to thank the committee. If we can give them one more round of applause. It takes a lot to put on an event like this, a lot of principles, right? And so it doesn't go unnoticed. Everything's been beautiful, and if you think it could be better, get on the committee. I also want to welcome the newcomer. If you're in your first 30 days, could you please stand up? We have a responsibility to them, to welcome them where they are and love them where they are, and carry the message the NA way to them. And you guys also have a responsibility to allow us to love you where you are and reach out when you need us. My home group is Monday Night Miracles in Apache Junction, Arizona. We meet every Monday at 7 and read the basic text, and then we share on it for an hour. I have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. I talk to him at least 5 days a week. I'm actively on a fifth step, so I'm like going to try really hard not to drop a fourth step tonight because I just finished one. We just wrapped up working a 12th tradition last month. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I'm not like going to give you my resume, but I'm going to let you know what I do, because if you want what we have, you got to do what we do, right? So I'm on the convention committee in Arizona. I have an H&I position. I have a home group position, because I was told we got to give this away. And recently, I wanted to create a new position at my home group because I stole it from another home group. And I think it was in December, I was like, we need a newcomer wrangler, and I want to be it, right? So we can let them know and make sure they get numbers and make sure they understand like what it is to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And I got to experience firsthand my new duties on Monday night, right? We had some newcomers show up, and I was like, oh, this is cool. But one of them was, like, wasted, and he was being loud and disruptive. And then, like, my higher power was like, Dalton, you're that damn newcomer wrangler, remember? I'm like, oh, okay. And, we got him some phone numbers. And I went and I took it to him, and I said, I tried really hard to, like, share a message that a newcomer could relate to, because I felt like it was my duty for some identification. And I went up to him after the meeting and I said, yeah, man, my name's Dalton, and welcome, and if you want what we have, I recommend calling some of these numbers, and his response was, I don't need any of that. All I need is me. And he crumpled it up and walked out. And like, I laughed. I was like, what? And then like, I started praying throughout, since Monday, I've gotten into some prayer about this man. And I realized, man, he's probably so full of fear, just like I was, right? And so I continue, like, on a daily basis to just pray for this newcomer and let him find the freedom that I've found in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, so like I said, I have a home group, and I have a sponsor, and I have sponsees, and I have service commitments, and I have a clean date. And my clean date, so in September of 2023, oh shit, I'm going to start my timer. In September of 2023, I picked up my 8-year medallion. Hold on. In January of 2024, through getting entirely honest, I made a decision to change my clean date, right? I gave back 18 months that you guys fronted to me for some years, right? And it was through the process of step work and sponsorship, right? So when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I got onto a medication called methadone, right? And I'm not implying or endorsing, I'm just sharing my experience, right? And you guys loved me where I was. And I started working steps, and I became a GSR, and then I got off of it. And I always had this thought in the back of my head. I should probably change my clean date. Maybe when I get 5 years for real, you know, I'm justifying and rationalizing. So when I really get 6.5, I'll let the fellowship know. You know, my wife knew, my sponsor knew, and my family knew, and that was it. And then after that date came, I said, maybe when I have 10 years for real, I'll change my clean date. And, you know, what happened was I started to feel uncomfortable, and I started to feel like a fraud. And I would pick sponsors because I knew, like, when I was going to make a change in sponsorship, I knew that they would, like, be okay with it and not give me some truth that I needed to hear. And so finally, you know, what was happening was I was starting to feel uncomfortable in my relationship with my sponsor. He was really no longer a member of NA, and my disease told me I was his lifeline to the program, so I needed to stay his sponsee to help him. And I'll never forget, I was standing outside my house loading up my dump trailer, and I had some feelings that I was so uncomfortable with, right? Just thoughts that I did not want to have, and I said, wow. You should probably tell your sponsor. And I realized I didn't trust my sponsor with that information. And the higher power of my understanding told me you need to get a new sponsor, like, now. Right? And so 2 years ago, last August, I made a decision to make a change in sponsorship, and it's been the most loving thing I could do for myself at that moment. And the guy I asked to sponsor me, I had wanted him to sponsor me 5 years earlier, but he lived 60 miles away. And that was the first strike. And then the next kicker was, I was mentioning to my wife I wanted to change sponsors, and she goes, well, Joel would be a good sponsor. And I'm like, I was already thinking that, but now that you said it, you think it's your idea, so I definitely can't do that, right? So I went through 5 extra years of pain because my ego wouldn't let her think she chose my sponsor, right? You know, but I sat down with Joel to work another first step. And I remember driving, it was January, it was about 2 years ago, it was raining in Arizona, and it doesn't usually rain, and we're going to meet at the coffee shop, and I'm going to get entirely honest with this man about what was going on 8 years prior. And I was so fearful, and I remember driving, and I'm already in my head, like, I'm going to tell him I was on this medication, but I'm not going to tell him about the nights I saved a little bit because I thought it would make me perform better with my woman. I'm not going to tell him that. I'm just going to tell him, like, some of it, right? And I sat down, and I just let everything go. And I got entirely honest. I felt a freedom. And I said, all right, Joel, what am I going to do? Do I have to change my clean date? And he's like, listen, Dalton, I'm not going to tell you what you have to do, right? He said, he started saying crazy stuff, and it sounded like he was rapping. It sounded really good. He's like, if you're living in confusion and contradiction, you know, you won't find the freedom you need. And you got to get uncomfortable to get comfortable. And I was like, okay, I think I know what I need to do. And so we started working that first step, and then we went to his home group that night. And there was a girl there that was supposed to be Sharon. Her name was Lauren, and Lauren didn't show up for the meeting. And there just happened to be another girl named Lauren that was there. And they're like, well, you have the same name. Will you share tonight? I'm like, okay. And so she shared. And she shared about my story. And how she just picked up 5 years, but she's only been off her medication for 5 months. And she's feeling conflicted. And she wants to feel convicted, right? That was another thing Joel said. Do you want to feel convicted, not conflicted? And, you know, I don't know how it goes here, but, like, that's not a topic people share about a lot, especially in an open meeting, right? And it was just like, that was my God speaking to me, letting me know I'm right where I need to be. And so I made that decision, and I started letting those really close to me know, you know, I'm going to be picking up. It was, you know, I picked up 8 in September. I was going to be picking up 7 in March. You know, and like some of my best friends were like, you're going the fucking wrong way. You know, they're like, what are you going to get in 6 months? 5? but there was a freedom and a peace that I felt getting entirely honest. And I want to read the gist for today because my new clean date's March 17th, 2017. Thank you. And I finally feel free telling you that. For the first year, year and a half, people would say, what's your clean date? I'd say, well, it's March 17th, but... And I'd want to explain, like, and let them know, like, I was a GSR and I was kind of clean, but I'm comfortable today where I am. And I woke up and I pulled up the gist for today, and I had never really had a connection to March 17th, so I didn't know what I was in for. And I start reading the gist for today, and it says, March 17th, true courage. Those who make it through these times show a courage not their own. Before coming to NA, many of us thought we were brave simply because we had never experienced fear. We drugged all of our feelings, fear among them, until we convinced ourselves that we were tough, courageous people who wouldn't crack under any circumstances. But finding our courage in drugs has nothing to do with the way we live our lives today. Clean and in recovery, we are bound to feel frightened at times. When we first realize we are feeling frightened, we may think we are cowards. We're afraid to pick up the phone because the person on the other end might not understand. We're afraid to ask someone to sponsor us because they might say no. We're afraid to look for a job. We're afraid to be honest with our friends. But all of these fears are natural, even healthy. What's not healthy is allowing fear to paralyze us. When we permit our fear to stop our growth, we will be defeated. True courage is not the absence of fear, but rather the willingness to walk through it. Just for today, I would be courageous today. When I'm afraid, I'll do what I need to grow in my recovery. You know, and I read that and I just felt instantly relief. And I yelled to my wife across the house. I was like, Brittany! I was like, you gotta hear this shit. Like, I was like, this is mine, right? And I remember, like, I had already started to experience this thing, right? That I know now is called a softening of the spirit. And I start reading it. She's like doing her puzzle, and I'm on the couch reading it to her. And I remember, like, halfway through it, my voice cracking and, like, feeling emotional. And just, like, another indication from the God of my understanding, I'm right where I need to be. And then a minute later, I'm scrolling Facebook, you know, because that's what I do in the mornings, usually before I open any medications, just being honest. And see, there was a member in Narcotics Anonymous in Phoenix. His name was Danny C. And we had the same clean date, September 16th. And I wasn't even really close to this guy, but I admired him. He had been, like, of service since the 80s, helped start our conventions, and I just was drawn to his spirit, and I felt connected because we shared a clean date. And my disease was like, if you change your clean date, you're never going to have a connection with Danny anymore, right? Because, like, my disease can make some stuff up and get me twisted and stuck really quick. And I woke up, and I'm scrolling, and March 17th is Danny's belly button birthday, right? Like, I get the chills, man. I can't make this stuff up. And I instantly fire off a message to him and just let him know. And, you know, the beautiful thing is, like, today I have an awareness that these type of moments have been happening my entire life, right? I just was not aware. I was clouded, right? Like, I come up here and I'm nervous, man. Like, I don't know if it's the cold, but like I got it back over here at 6. I've peed 5 times since 6 o'clock, right? And it's and the truth is it's nerves because I'm about to get up here and I'm going to get vulnerable. And like, you know, I pray, just let me be authentic. Let me be myself, you know, because I want to come up here and I want to sound good. And I want you guys to like me and accept me and tell me how good I did. But the truth is, man, I just want someone to find a spark of hope. That they could lose the desire to use and find a new way to live and learn how to apply these principles in their daily lives. Not just in the rooms, but outside the rooms. You know, because I've seen firsthand people that can really, really carry an awesome message, but they don't live an awesome message. And it makes me realize, like, it don't matter how I sound, it matters how I live. Right? And so, you know, I live in Apache Junction, Arizona. I grew up in Apache Junction, Arizona. And the first feeling of shame I had was being from Apache Junction. You know, I don't know, like, I don't know what you can compare that to here, but it's like the armpit of Arizona. They call it AJ or Dysfunction Junction, you know. And like, I remember listening to the DJs on the radio dissing AJ all the time, man. They're like, oh, they're, all that's in AJ is like the toothless tweakers and trailers, you know. And like, I was like, I hated being from AJ. Like, we'd be like kids riding our bikes to the mall and telling everyone, where are you from? Like, I'm from East Mesa, right? I'm from East Mesa, and I just like remember feeling the shame of being from there. I didn't want to be from AJ, right? And I love Apache Junction today. We have a home group there, and we get to like just be active members in Narcotics Anonymous and outside of Narcotics Anonymous and live this program. You know, I have a mom that's in recovery. She's got like, it's a beautiful thing, right? 28 years in AA, and I was the kid going around, running around the AA meetings with her and my sister and like raising hell in the back of the room. Everyone smoking cigarettes, telling me to be quiet and color, you know. But like, I was attracted to that lifestyle. Like, I remember going to campouts and stuff as a youth and bringing friends, and we were driving home from this camp out, and we were like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? And like, my buddy, he wanted to be something. My sister wanted to be like a nurse. And I'm like, well, I'm Dalton. I just want to be an alcoholic. And, you know, because like, there was a bunch of bikers with tattoos, women, and I was like, yeah, this was cool. And like, I had been told my entire life, like, I probably have this disease. I'm genetically predisposed. It runs rampant in my family. And I had no real understanding of what that was, right? But it had been drilled into me, like, you're an addict. You're, it's very evident, right? And so I remember when I, the first time I was introduced to any type of drugs, I was in eighth grade and I'm riding my bike with some friends and they go to smoke weed out of a soda can behind the fire station. And I still had that pure innocence, right? And they're like, do you want to hit this? And I'm hanging out watching. I'm like, no way, man. And like, I'm thinking back, like the Diamondbacks just won the World Series and one of their players was on a TV commercial and he said, drugs destroy dreams. And I remember telling them, no way, man, drugs destroy dreams. And I believed it. The next year I got into high school, right? And the thing is, like, I wanted what you had, so I'm going to do what you do. And like what I wanted, like I was like a 5 foot tall freshman and I wanted to be a 6 foot tall senior with a car and a girlfriend. And so like I just see what they did and they partied. And so I remember like early on I went to a party and I was like, I didn't want you to see me not drinking, so I'm going to have a beer. And I drank half a beer and I went and poured it out. And I remember getting home that night and thinking, man, these people have been lying to me my whole life. I'm not an addict. I didn't have any consequences. Nothing bad happened. I didn't like grow tattoos or go to jail. And I really believed, man. Like they've been lying to me. And so like the next week I went out and I did what you did because I wanted what you had. And like I blacked out and I was like the story of the weekend. Come Monday, everyone's like, do you remember what Dalton did? And I'm like trying to listen because I didn't know what Dalton did. You know, but like I got a lot of attention and I've always loved attention, good or bad, it was still attention. And like my disease progressed rapidly. You know, I was always very active and good at sports and it curbed a lot of my consequences through school. But like Within a year and a half of that, I was like freebasing every day, and the consequences were starting to become very prevalent in my life. I'm having to like sit down with the football coach, the baseball coach, my mom, my dad, the superintendent, and like be told I need to stop doing what I'm doing, right? And we were going to get sent to rehab when we were 16 because we got a lot of trouble for, we had been stealing like tens of thousands of dollars from my stepmom's bank account without her knowing. You know, but it was my stepbrother's fault. I was innocent. You know, like learning how to accept personal responsibility is a beautiful thing. You know, I can quit pointing the finger there and start looking in the mirror. But what happened was we got caught again, and they said we're sending you guys to treatment. And I said, well, I'm 16. I'm moving out, man. I'm going to go live with mom, and that's what I did. And I stopped using for like, I don't know. I feel like I didn't use for 9 months. That's the number I have in my head. It could have been 9 weeks, but it felt like 9 months. And I remember thinking, like, I got this under control. I'm not an addict. I don't have a problem. I just like to party. I'm a jock, you know. And I started using again, and my disease started to progress. You know, I was able to earn myself a football scholarship to a school in Colorado. Because of having success in sports, all my teachers just like brushed under the rug all the chaos I caused in school. And I got to Colorado and I brought Dalton with me, right? And within 2 days I found the addicts. And 3 days into the second semester, I pretty much lost my scholarship, right? The coach had one rule: be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. I was the only one that couldn't be where he was supposed to be because I used too much prior. And it was years until I learned how to accept some responsibility for that. Man, I blame that football coach because, like, football was one of my first addictions long before a substance, right? One of my first loves. And he took, you know, I blamed him for years. It's because of him I can't play football. I always thought I was going to grow a little bit taller and get a little faster, too. Like, it didn't happen. I left that school. I ended up picking up a couple charges, and I got put on probation, and I moved to Arizona, and within 24 hours, I got arrested in Arizona, you know, and the disease just kept progressing, you know, and I was like, it was just a DUI for drugs. It's not serious, you know. My problem is Colorado, so I'm going to go to ASU and just focus on studies and become a drug dealer. You know, so I took a student loan out for like $1,500, and you know, and AJ, I was like a legend in my own mind. I always was. I still am a little bit. Let's just be honest. But you know, what happened was, at one time I saved up $10,000. You know, I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have anything in my name, but I had 10 grand, and I really believed. Like, my ego had me convinced. I was like the Al Capone of AJ. Like I'm sure the FBI's watching me. You know, like, I really believe this stuff. But what happened was, I started using more than I could afford. Right? And then I didn't have any money. And then I started using more and more, and I started going into debt to people you don't want to owe money to. And then I started doing things I swore I would never do to pay the people you don't want to owe money to, right? And I started going to treatment. I would call my mom. I'd be like, oh, you know, I'm using again, and I can't stop. I need to go to treatment. And I started having seizures, and there was no way it was a result of my using, right? I'm 23 years old at this time, and I'm convinced I developed epilepsy. You know, and I'd wake up after having another grand mal seizure, and they'd be like showing me the toxicology report and trying to tell me like what I need to do. And I'd say, I just need to get out of here, man. Like, I'm epileptic. Obviously, I need to stay away from strobe lights, and everything will be fine. You know, I like could not identify that drugs were causing the wreckage in my life. You know, and I had some female hostages along the way. And, you know, it always started as like using friends and then using relationship, and then it was always the same. Dalton, if you don't stop, I'm leaving. Right? And I didn't know how to stop. And then they would leave, and my disease would progress a little bit more because I would have even more freedom. And at the end of the road, man, I swore I was going to stop. Every single night. I'm going to use the rest of this tonight and I'm going to stop tomorrow. And I'm talking for years. I am telling myself, God, please, I promise there's nothing that will make me use tomorrow. You know, and I would wake up and there was nothing that could stop me from getting one more. Because I didn't have tools. I didn't have a program in Narcotics Anonymous to teach me that I didn't have to pick up. I didn't know that if I didn't put it in my body, I wouldn't get high. Right? I didn't understand that. And so, you know, I started getting introduced. I finally went to treatment, a full residential treatment. And I moved back into my mom's house after I got evicted and I had nowhere else to go. I rented a U-Haul. I said, Mom, I got nowhere to go. Can I move back in? And they said, yeah. And so I rented a U-Haul, and it took me like 5 days to get 3 miles. You know. And I show up at her house thinking she's going to be at work. It'll be a nice, slick move-in, and you know, they're there. And they're like, we know you're using. And I said, okay. They're like, we put you on our insurance. Do you want to go to treatment in Florida? And like, I don't know about you, but I always wanted to travel. And so I heard, do you want to go to Florida? And so I'm like looking up Florida, white sand, clear water, thong bikinis. I'm like, yeah, let's go. And like, I was on a plane to Florida the next day. And it was a 12-step based detox and recovery home. And, you know, I knew everything, right? Like we do. You know, they're like, oh, these are the 12 steps. I said, oh man, I grew up with those. I know the Serenity Prayer. And I said, I don't need that, man, because I seen the movie 28 Days. I just need to go here for 28 days and stop using for 28 days and then go home and my life will be good. I'll get a car, I'll get a girl, I'll get an apartment, maybe get a job. And I remember them saying things like, you need to stay here for 1 month every year you use. And I'm doing the math. I'm like, I don't have that kind of time. I had better things. You know, but what happened was the miracle, right? The seed was planted. There's a little thing in Narcotics Anonymous. It's called H&I.
Yeah.
Right? Hospitals and institutions. It takes meetings into facilities that aren't able to go to outside meetings. And there was a Wednesday night panel that came to this treatment center I was at. And there was this guy named Jarrett that came on a Wednesday night and shared his experience, strength, and hope. And all I remember was Jarrett was like 6'5", tattooed from his neck to his knuckles. And I pictured myself 6'5 with tattoos. That's how I saw myself. That's not at all how I look, but that's how I saw myself. And I remember thinking, like, man, if, like, this is the type of dude I use with. Man, if he can get clean, maybe I can get clean. And, you know, I didn't stay clean. I had to do a lot more research. And, you know, I had to become homeless and, like, live on the streets and really get to the bitter end and find that true gift of desperation. But it planted the seed, right? And when I made it back to Narcotics Anonymous, I couldn't believe, like, they're like telling me, I go to this camp out, and I get dropped off at a camp out, 2 hours from my house, and I had nothing else to do, and so I take my tent, and there's like everyone camping in a big circle, and I took my tent like 500 feet away from everybody where you couldn't see me, and I started camping, and I would like pop in for chow, you know, mealtime, and start like making connections. And I see now how badly my disease wanted to separate me from you guys, right? My disease wasn't comfortable and didn't want me to get comfortable and didn't want me to make connections, right? But I started to get connections, and people, I would just be walking through campsites and people would just stop and hug me. Because if you're new and you're at a camp out or a convention, we know, right? And they knew, right? You know, I was like 140 pounds. My teeth were falling out. I couldn't eat sunflower seeds or nothing. I didn't know if it was a tooth or a seed breaking. And I still thought I looked good, you know. But like, you guys loved on me, and you asked me where I lived. And you said, okay, well, there's a meeting on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, 4 miles from your house. And I'm like, what? I truly was like shocked. I'm like, they have NA that close to my house? I remember telling someone, I said, oh man, I thought there was only AA by me. That's why I can't get clean. That's what I told them. And so I started going to these meetings and forming true relationships, right? And I got a home group. And I got a sponsor. And my first home group was GFTS, Group for That Shit. And we met Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 7. It was an outdoor meeting in the park. I smoked 3 to 4 cigarettes a meeting. I loved it. You know, you could smoke. And I didn't know anything about being of service. I just knew, like, I was desperate enough to follow some suggestions. And they said, get a sponsor, and I got a sponsor in that home group. And they said, you need to come to the business meeting. And, like, next thing I know, I don't even know what a business meeting is. They're like, just show up. And next thing I know, they're like, Dalton, you're the new Friday night hot dog cooker. I'm like, okay, yeah. I don't even know how to cook a hot dog. I can barely cook a ramen. But show me. And, like, this miracle started to happen in my life, right? I started showing up early and cleaning the grill and prepping, meal prepping and getting it all ready. And then I would stay late and clean up, and I formed connections with you guys. And I started to have some accountability, and you guys just poured love into me. And instead of sitting in the meeting thinking about all the profound things I could say with 4 weeks clean, I just cooked hot dogs, right? And like, I formed these beautiful relationships, and then what would happen, like if I missed a Monday meeting, someone would call me and be like, hey, where are you at, man? You're not at the home group. I'd be like, well, I only cook on Fridays, like I'm watching Netflix. I'd be like, okay, well, your home group meets Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays. You know, and I started like having some accountability. And then I started working some steps with my first sponsor, and I started to find some freedom. You know, but like, I had like lived this diseased life for so long, right? Like, I'm talking way before I picked up a substance, I was a thief. I would ride my bike at 10 years old to the box stores and fill my pockets with Pokemon cards, you know? Because like, you guys had some cool Pokemon cards and I wanted what you had, so I'm gonna go get them. And so when I came in, I was still a thief. Right? And so every time I went to the corner store, it was buy one, get one. Or buy none, get two. Every time. Right? And like, I'm not telling my sponsor about that stuff. I'm not telling my home group about that stuff. I'm just like talking about the destruction the drugs caused. And then at 4 months clean, I went into a grocery store with a duffel bag and I got tackled running out with it, full of stuff. Right? And you know, I don't know what my intentions were that day. Maybe if I didn't get caught, I was going to use. I don't know. But I did. And I wrestled my way out of it, and I bolted. And I remember just, like, getting home and thinking, fuck. Like, if you just went to jail, you can't even blame the drugs anymore. Like, I can't say I stole because I'm high. I had literally no excuse, and like something happened. And I picked up the phone and I called my sponsor. And I got honest. And I said, listen, bud, this is what just happened. This is what I did. And he said, okay, well, you need to grow the fuck up, punk. And you need to come to the home group tonight and you need to share about it. And I was like, ooh, I was getting mad. You know, call me a punk. You know, but like, but that was 4 months in, and 4 months of following suggestions had found a freedom from using, and I had lost the desire to use drugs. And so I came to the home group and I shared, and I got some feedback similar. I got some aggressive feedback, and I got some loving feedback, and you know, people just like shared their experience, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys have been through this too? And someone just said, why don't you just pray for the willingness not to steal? And I said, okay, I could probably do that. And I remember getting home that night and I started praying, and I didn't know who I was praying to. And I realized, like, I think I need to form a relationship with a God of my own understanding. And that first night I laid in bed and all I did was list off every God I had ever heard of. I'm talking comic book gods, any God, you know, Zeus, Thor, Buddha, you know. And I'm just waiting for one of them to listen. But I probably fell asleep before I even got to the prayer the first night. But then the second night, I just started praying, like, let me become willing not to steal, right? And like 7 days went by, and then it's Friday, and I go to the mall, and then, you know, it's hot dog night. And I get home from the mall, and I got a new pair of snowboard pants that I didn't pay for. And I started to feel physically sick, like ill. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I'm gonna have to call into my home group, man. I'm gonna have to get a new hot dog cooker because I'm sick. And it was just like one of those moments where my higher power spoke to me and he said, you're not sick. You're sick because you stole against your will and you need to get honest. And I called my sponsor and I said, this is what just happened. This is what's going on. And he said, you need to grow the fuck up, punk. You know? And he said, you need to come to the home group tonight and you need to get honest. Right? Yeah. And it wasn't comfortable. It wasn't comfortable getting honest and letting you know, like, I got some defects without the use of. And I did that, and I got honest. And I don't steal today. I haven't stolen anything since then, right? And I'm talking like I'm at the restaurant, and the waiter has a really nice pen. My mind tells me if you leave him an extra $5, you can keep it. But I don't do it, right? And actually, I had an incident happen last month. And we were in London for Christmas. I've had a few beautiful spiritual awakenings in London that I'm going to try to touch on. But this one was, we went to a public bathroom, and we're walking in, and there's a turnbuckle. You got to tap your card and pay $1 to get in. And as I'm about to walk in, I pull out my card, and this little kid says, "Oh, just push through it. You don't have to pay. Push through it." Oh, hell yeah. I push through it, go to the bathroom. As I'm walking out, there's these two women about to pay, and I'm like, "Oh, hell no, you just push through it. You don't have to pay." And then I get outside, and I start thinking. I'm like, "Oh, my gosh, that was quick." And I'm like, "Whoa." I said, "I think you just not only stole, but you talked them into doing it, too." And so I go to a meeting that night, and I just had an overwhelming feeling, like, wow, you need to go back to that bathroom tomorrow and pay $4 for sure. You know? And it wasn't convenient, man. It was 30 minutes away. But we did it. We said, this is part of our schedule tomorrow now, because you guys have taught me how to right some wrongs. And I knew in 2 hours, 3 hours, I was not feeling comfortable. I could not imagine what I feel like today. I'd be telling my wife, "I need to plan a trip to London, man, for $4." You know, but so I stopped stealing at 6 months clean. I got a knock on the door, and they're like, "Oh, you Dalton so and so?" I'm like, "Yeah, that's me." They're like, "Oh, wonderful, you've been served." And I open it up, and I'm getting charged with 6 felonies, and I'm thinking, "Whoa." I used to be that addict that would be bragging, man. "Oh, man, I'm a slick talking. I can get my way out of anything. I got fake license plates on the cars. And I'm driving around I had a Cadillac, so I thought I was still it." Right? You know, I'd be driving around, quick coke, quick crack, just bought a Cadillac. And the thing was, I had an electrical short. I got flashlights taped in the back for the license plate light. I got flashlights for the left, no turn signal. So I'm driving like this everywhere. Fake plate, no registration, no insurance. And I got pulled over 5 times and talked my way out of it with all my gear, right? Everything, because I couldn't go anywhere without my stuff. And then finally what happened was I couldn't talk my way out of it. You know, and the cop says, "Why are you sweating so much?" And I said, "Well, it's probably because I got 2 pairs of pants on." I just got done stealing, of course. And then I realized, why did I tell him that? That night I went to jail. And a year later, I was 6 months clean, and I got those summons to appear in court. And my first thought was, you better call your sponsor. That's a direct result of applying some of these principles in Narcotics Anonymous, because the old Dalton would have been calling some people "Let's go down to Mexico. Who wants to go on vacation?" And so I called Bud and I said, "Listen, Bud, this is what's going on, man. These are my charges. There's 6 felonies from a class 2 all the way to some 4s and a 6. And he goes, "Okay, Dalton, well, if you go to prison, that's just where you're supposed to be, because there's an addict that needs to hear a message of hope." And I remember what? I said, "But man, I've been hearing in the meetings, I need you to tell me we got 100 character reference letters and we are going to walk through this." And, but what happened was I was able to show up. And by then I was already a contributing member to society, and I was an active member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I was already chairing meetings. So I go to court and I get the drug diversion program, and I'm signing my own meeting list, and I'm feeling like a real badass. Yep, I chaired that meeting, I can sign it myself, and it wasn't a lie. Right before I got off that diversion program at 1 year clean, my biggest dream was always to travel, right? I always wanted to travel. The thing was, I knew I couldn't even leave the bathroom. Definitely couldn't leave the block. I definitely couldn't leave the country. And so, in these grandiose moments, I would plan all these trips. I'm going to go to Rome and drive from here to here, and then I would look up, where do I cop dope in Rome? Where do I cop, you know? I'm like, thank God I never went anywhere. But when I got a year clean, I booked a trip, right? And I went to the London Convention of Narcotics Anonymous. And experiencing Narcotics Anonymous on a worldwide level lit a fire inside of me, right? Like, I remember going there and just seeing how active and how these members participate, and like, it was beautiful. And I remember this guy's like, bloody hell, you're from America? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, that's where NA came from. And like, I'm talking like, I was going to a Thursday night meeting in the middle of northern England in a city called Doncaster. And I was staying in Nottingham, which was a little over an hour away. I had a rental car. This kid, Daniel, wanted to be of service to NA so bad, he said, no, I'm going to come pick you up for the meeting. So he had to leave an hour early, right? I'm talking, this dude had like 7 or 8 hours just to get me to one meeting. Because the meeting started at 7, I was an hour away, and he was an hour away from me. So he left at like 4:30 to pick me up at 5:30 to get me there by 6:30. The meeting ended at like 8:30. And then we went out for dinner after for an hour, and then he drove us another hour back and then drove home another hour. And I'm like, wow, this is how these members in some rural areas are showing up for their program in Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm sitting here home from work on a Wednesday thinking, damn, man, 15 minutes is a bit far. Thinking, I'm a little tired, man. 7 to 8, I don't know, man. I got a couple more episodes on my show, right? Like, that's the truth, right? And then I get to see how other members apply the principles into their program and show up for other members, and I'm like, okay. And, you know, there's been so many beautiful moments. I met a girl, right? At 13 months, I met a girl, and I remember, like, I had worked the 12 steps, and I had found freedom, and I remember I had prayed for those defects and shortcomings to be lifted. And I remember also hearing, like, if you want to know what your defects are, get into a relationship. I'm like, not me. Man, I found freedom from them defects. And what happened was I got into a relationship. You know, so we meet. I'll tell you how we met, right? I was 13 months. I was ready for a relationship, I thought. And I had finished the steps, and I wasn't liking what I saw at NA, so I'm going to go cherry pick one from AA. And so I go to this camp out, and I meet this girl, and there was a couple red flags. She said, I'm married. I said, do you have a sponsor? She said, yes. I said, okay, we can work with that. I got a sponsor too, right? You know, we texted for a few. She was going through a divorce, and going to be soon, you know. And we started talking, right? And what happened was when we started dating, these defects started to show back up. And I was like, where is this coming from? Like this fear and this insecurity and this jealousy that I thought had been gone. The difference was, you guys taught me I didn't have to let her know how psycho my thinking was. Right? Because I was like the ex, like in my previous relationships, I was so full of fear and so insecure that like she got off work at 2 and she worked 12 minutes away. Right? And so I said, okay, it's 2:18. I call her, I say, where you been at for 6 minutes? I know you should be home. Send me your location. Screenshot your phone. Like, that's how I was. I was a psycho, man. And like, I don't mind letting you know, right? I got to let you know who I was, because that's not who I am today. And I started to get that fear back. And instead of letting her know I still had these psychotic thoughts, I called Bud, man. I called my sponsor. I'm talking 3, 4, 5 times a day. Bud, this is what's going on. This is what I'm feeling. He's just, every time, you're lacking faith. You're lacking faith. And some other stuff. And then there was this one moment. She was, we had been dating for like 5 or 6 weeks. And she's going to go make this newcomer guy feel welcome. She's going to meet him in a meeting and make him feel welcome. Him feel welcome. I'm thinking, okay. So I call Bud. I'm twisted up. I'm like, Bud, she says she's going to go to the meeting to make him feel welcome. And he says, listen, Dalton, if she's banging that dude behind the dumpster, that's just what's supposed to happen. And I'm heated, right? Because like I can feel my face getting red. I'm picturing it, and like I hang up. F Bud, man, I ain't talking to him for a few days, right? But I never said nothing to her. I didn't let her know. I was so scared and so full of fear, and just terrified. And like a couple days later, like the miracle happened, right? I started to get an overwhelming sense of like, okay, this is where you get to apply some of those principles you learn about in the steps, like powerlessness and faith and acceptance, right? And like, how am I going to control what she does if I can't even control what goes on in here? And I started to find freedom through the phase of acceptance that I'm powerless over her and over you and over what you do, right? And like a miracle started to happen, and I started to continue to experience growth, right? Because we would work these steps, and I think Jamie touched on it this afternoon, right? There's spiritual principles behind the steps, right? And like the goal is you work a step and you learn how to apply that principle into your daily life, right? Not just in NA, in life, in all of our affairs. And so like I get to apply the powerlessness and the acceptance and the faith and the courage to let my sponsor know I have fear and let him get to know me. And we continue to have a beautiful relationship. You know, and like right around that time, we started saying we should probably move in together because it's financially responsible. You know, and I had just got done remodeling this condo right down the street from where I was living, and I knew we could like I had like not a good record, so I knew we couldn't really just go to an apartment and rent. And so I tell my sponsor, she tells her sponsor, we're going to look at this condo, and they both say, don't do it. Give yourselves an opportunity to grow apart so you can learn how to grow together. And like for some odd reason, we took a suggestion. And I was like, man, like it was an opportunity. We needed that apartment. It was perfect. That condo was perfect for us. And we spent a year living apart. And we started looking for apartments or condos, and we're going to move in together a year later. And like the problem was, like I had stuff on my record that prevented me from renting. People didn't want to rent the dome, and she didn't make enough to qualify on her own. So we had to find somebody that was willing to take a risk on us. And so we find a condo, and we call a lady, and she goes, you know what? Like you should meet me there, and I'm just going to sit down and talk to you and hear your story. And we went and talked to her and just got completely honest, you know, where we were and where we are. And she said, you know, I ran your background, and my background lady said, there ain't no way am I going to rent to you, but something in my spirit's telling me I should, so I'm gonna. And it was, I get the chills, man. It was next door, directly next door, connected to the condo I had remodeled a year prior. Right? Just, it totally randomly happened, right? I'm telling, like, these God moments have always been there. I just have gained an awareness that Narcotics Anonymous has given me to be aware of it. And so we started our journey. You know, we we had the NA wedding, right? You know, we NA girl meets NA boy. And, you know, we have a beautiful relationship, right? Because she has a sponsor and I have a sponsor. And we have our own programs, right? And we both work steps and we both apply principles. And so, like, we have this beautiful relationship based on love and communication and intimacy, right? And so we got married, and like I had this plan, right? We're going to get married, we're going to buy a house, and we're going to have kids. And so we get married, and we buy a house, and we start trying to have kids. And like a year goes by, and we had zero pregnancies. And I remember like talking with my wife, talking with my sponsor, and like thinking, man, like I don't know what's going on. I thought you just tried. 9 months later, here it is. And that wasn't the case. And there started to be words that flew around called infertility. And I'm like, you know what? Like people would ask me, how are you feeling? I said, I'm good, man. Like I have faith that it's gonna happen. I'm in faith, it's gonna happen. And then a year went by and my faith started to shift, right? And it started to shift, like it's going to happen how God wants it to happen. Right? And then we started realizing, like, we have to take steps in our lives, right? And so we started following some suggestions, and we started seeing doctors and specialists. And then 2 years went by, and we started doing these treatments, right? Expensive-ass treatments. Because we were taught how to show up in our lives and, like, follow some suggestions. And the doctor said, this is what's next. This is what's next. And we just kept doing the next right thing and learning how to apply these principles in painful situations. And then, like, 3 years went by, and we had zero pregnancies. And we're like, man, F the science doctors. We're going to a natural path. And I'm talking, we got rid of every chemical in the house. Shampoo and deodorant that don't even work, but it's going to help. Right? And we're following suggestions, and we change our diet, and we stop eating. It's only organic, dairy-free, gluten-free shit I can't pronounce. You know, and you know, because we're learning how to like show up for ourselves. And then a year of that, and we had zero pregnancies. And like I'm talking now, it's painful. Now every time of the month, that time of the month comes around, the stages of grief come. And really learning how to apply some powerlessness to a situation that I so badly want to have power over. And I'm talking a lot of writing and a lot of phone calls to my sponsor. And then the doctor say, okay, well, this is what's next. You need to both have a surgery. And okay, like, we're willing to do whatever it takes. And they're like, this is kind of like the last straw. You got, like, and I have a surgery in December, and then in April, it'll be 2 years this April, they said, okay, you need to come back in for an analysis. And so I give a sample, and it usually takes 10 days to get the results. And I give the sample, and I have an hour to drive. And I just jump in the van, and I start driving, and I start praying. And it was like different. The connection I had to the higher power, my understanding was different than any connection I have ever felt at any moment. And I just said, God, please let me be okay no matter what. No matter what the results are, let me be okay. And I got home that night and I got an email. And it usually takes 10 days to get the results. And less than 10 hours later, the results were in our inbox. And I remember I'm in the bathroom, and I open the email, right? And there's a word I can't pronounce, and I Google it. And it says, male infertility cannot produce naturally. And I remember feeling that feeling in my gut of just immense pain and sadness, right? And yelling to my wife, like, we got the results. And the truth was, like, we had talked about this being the potential outcome for years. And she would always say, if it comes down to not being able to have kids, I hope it's my fault, right? And I'd be like, you know what? I hope it's my fault if we can't have kids, right? And I got that damn email, and it was my fault. And I remember thinking, fuck, I wish it was her fault. But getting down to the exact nature of things, the reason I wanted it to be her fault was because I knew I could accept it. And deep down, I didn't know if she could accept me. And talk about learning how to apply some principles, right? Some true powerlessness and some true faith, you know. And I'm talking like some deep sadness. Still, even though like I've got the results, 2 years goes by. And if she's 2 days late, the hope just comes back. And I'm talking 3 days late, my disease takes over, and I'm picking out fucking baby names, and I'm picturing myself calling my mom and saying, you're going to be a grandma, right? And picturing myself calling her dad and letting him know the beautiful news, right? And like N.A., right? Never alone, never again. And sometimes not always, right? You're not always going to get your kids back. You're not always going to get the girl back. You're not always going to get what you want, right? And when the rubber meets the road, how are you going to show up? You going to apply these principles into your life? Are you going to allow the defects? Am I going to allow the defects to take over and run rampant into my life and ruin all my relationships, right? And you guys taught me I don't have to allow my defects to entangle themselves into my affairs. I can let you know where I'm at. right? And like in the fifth step, and it works how and why. I got my book with me, and I don't really read it to you guys, but I feel comfortable with it, right? I showed up at a dope house with all my gear. I'm going to show up here with my book. You know, but in the fifth step, and it works how and why, it says something along the lines. It talks about like our pain. And in our mind, our pain is greater than yours, but it's not. My pain is just my pain, and your pain is your pain. Right? And it allows me to get a little bit more humble and just realize, like, this is what it is, man. And, like, I have to just continue to show up. I have to continue to practice these principles in all my affairs because my life is far better today than it ever was. Right? There's been so many beautiful moments along the way. I just finished a fourth step on Saturday, right? I've been on that fourth step for 14 months. And I got hours into meeting with my sponsor, right? I've been diligent. And through that process, there was so much pain, right? Because I remember sitting down with him and reading, like, for hours, just some shit. And I finished. And he says, "How do you feel?" And I said, "I feel terrible." I said, "I don't feel any freer. I feel worse." And I hadn't felt that way in a very, very long time, right? And then 3 weeks later, I had an incident happen. An exact same incident that happened months earlier that I did not handle well, right? Where my defects took over and my fear took over and my insecurities and inadequacies took over and caused grief in my life, caused a little bit of chaos in some of my relationships because I allowed the grief, I allowed my defects to take over, right? And I got freedom through sharing that, even though it sucked. And 3 weeks later, the same incident happened. And only for about 10 minutes did I feel the pain. And then I started to feel the freedom. And like, thank God for sponsorship, right? Because I don't realize that kind of stuff. And I talk, you know, I let him know, and he goes, "Man, remember where you were at 3 weeks ago? And to where you're at today, that's growth. That's why we do this." And so when I was finishing that fourth step, the common words that I could feel was peace and freedom, right? That's just the two words that kept coming to mind. And also, like, getting entirely honest, it says, "Is there any secrets? Or did you have any embellishments?" And my go-to is, I just want to say no. But the truth is, there was a little secret, right? Which it wasn't very little, but like, my disease wants to minimize everything. But my wife knew about it, my sponsor didn't. You know, and like, through this process of pain and shame and grief, I've had this cycle of like racking up massive amounts of debt. I don't know if anyone can relate, you know, but like, I'll rack up a bunch of debt. And then I'll work really hard and pay it off. Like, 1 year, I'll rack it all up like insane amounts of debt. And then I'll work really hard and pay it all off. And I've done this 2 full times. And I'm in one of those cycles again. And I'm at the secrets. And I just said, "You need to fucking get honest, man." And I have found so much freedom just letting someone else into this process of where I'm at, that I continue to feel new levels of peace and freedom, right? And I'm going to start wrapping it up. You know, one other beautiful moment that I love to share about is when I was in London at the London Convention a couple years ago, and my buddy was like, "Oh, you're coming to London?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Do you want to share?" I'm like, "Yeah, that'd be fucking awesome, man." He's like, "Okay, I'll let you know when you're sharing." So I get there, and I'm like, "Yo, Vidal, when am I sharing?" He goes, "I'll let you know." I'm looking at the program. I don't see my name or nothing. I'm like, "It's cool, man. All right." He's like, "I'll let you know." So Friday comes around. "I'll let you know tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow." I said, "Okay." So Saturday rolls around, and he's like, "Okay, you're going to be at 4 o'clock in the marathon room." And like, "Marathon room? They don't even have speakers in there, Paul." He goes, "Well, you're going to be speaking in there at 4 o'clock on Saturday, right?" And like, my ego, the truth is, right, my ego wanted me on the big stage, you know? But Narcotics Anonymous wanted me in the marathon room for the room miracle, right? So I show up to the marathon room. I'm sitting up there ready for my 10-minute share. And they start the readings. And this guy reads how it works. And he would read one line, and then he would stop, and he would read it again to himself. And then he would read it out loud again. And like, you can see the light bulb go off for this guy. And it turns out it was his first ever meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. Right? And like, I realized, like, God had me in that room just to be able to experience that. And we got to like love on this guy, Manny, and like what happened was he was sleeping on the streets of London near the convention in a sleeping bag. And another member with a badge on just said, "Hey man, do you want to get some tea and cookies or whatever they have? And tea and crumpets? I don't know." He said, "Do you want to come in and get warm and have a meeting?" And he didn't know anything about it. He said, "Sure." And he ended up there, and he had never even heard of Narcotics Anonymous. And to sit there and see the miracle of our program impact someone for the very first time just reminded me, man, we got so much to do. And there's so many more people that can be reached. No matter if it's on the big podium, the little podium, and PR and H&I. You know, like I hear people say, like, you know, treat the hotel staff, man, like another addict, because like we might be the only basic techs they ever meet. Right? And so like carry yourself like that. Like let them know, just like, you guys are doing a great job this weekend, right? Because it's important. I want to wrap it up with a part of a prayer that I read to myself regularly. You know, because I need to remind myself. I'm going to touch on one last thing. I got an hour or so left. So like through this grief and pain, there's been some relationships that have been strained, right? And our best friends ended up getting pregnant and having a kid in it, and it affected our relationship severely, right? And it's been hard. It's been really hard. And my buddy, I mean, he was there for like 75% of my clean time. He just had an anniversary in December, and I hadn't seen him since March. And I showed up at his home group, and he shared about being a dad and the joys and how happy he is. And his sponsor shared about the light bulb and his eyes going off when he had his son for the first time. And I was so overwhelmed with sadness, right? But like, the beautiful thing through that is before the meeting got out, I texted my sponsor. And I just said, "Listen, man, this is how I'm feeling. I'm sad. I'm in pain. And I'm uncomfortable. And I need you to know so that when we talk tomorrow, we can get to the exact nature of some things, right? Because I don't like feeling like that." You know? And so what I read to myself regularly is part of it. So ask for the knowledge of God's will for me today. Help me get out of the way so I can be present and allow your will to happen naturally and organically. Help me not force or impose my will in any situation. Help me show up and be present for others and really care for others with deep meaning, compassion, and understanding. Help me be okay with me right where I am in the moment. Let me build people up and want to see them succeed in all that they do, even if it's something I want and can't have. Allow me to seek solutions, not problems, today. My name is Dalton. I'm an addict.